we've spoken a lot about Occupy Wall Street
mm-hmm.
as an expression of much of the work that you do. So why don't we start with a quick, if you can maybe give a quick overview of what your perspective is, you know, in terms of, you know, the network age that we live
yes.
in. And then let's see how we can apply that to Occupy Wall Street.
Okay, well, you know, the first thing I want to say is when you mentioned the concept of P2P revolution, that's really what it means. So in other words, I'm convinced that peer production, it's an emergence of a new way of creating value, of governing ourselves and of protecting our common work, is a prefiguration of a new mode of production and a new type of society. And we've seen it emerging in many, many pockets in agriculture, in finance, you know, in different ways. A lot of local communities are, or even global communities, are practicing peer production. But we needed a mass social movement, and that's something we didn't have, because what we have are even 19th century labor movements, and this, I'm not saying this to belittle them, I'm just saying this to show that they come from a certain age and a certain type of society, which has, you know, determined their logic and their ways of thinking. Then we have in the 60s the identities movement. And then I think the other globalization movement for me is a bit of a bridge movement between those two movements. But I think that the Occupy Wall Street is different. It's the first native movement of the digital age, which goes beyond the kind of activist organizations that were present in the other globalization movement. And it really attracts a new layer of the general population, and especially young people, very diverse group, but also very much kind of an expression of, you know, what our life experience is today and what kind of forms we need today to make sense of our lives. And so it's a kind of the mass movement that a lot of people, including me, were waiting for. And so now that it's there, we're very happy, because this is really the tipping point we were waiting for. And so the issue is double. One is that Occupy Wall Street itself exemplifies what we talk about. So it's kind of a prefigurative movement. And I'd like to explain that in a few words, you know, how we see this. But then the other thing is that we need to combine Occupy Wall Street as the emerging mass movement of resistance with what we already know about the emergent productive communities that already apply peer production in their lives. And for me, the answer to the, you know, to actually change our society will come when we can have a convergence between productive publics and mass social movement. And I think the conditions are getting ready to arrive. It's going to be hard work, you know, but because there's two types of different people, really. You have people who feel compelled to resist, you know, put their bodies on the line and in a resistance movement, right? But you also have people who, for reason of personality or personal choice, are much more drawn to actually doing things right now and have a more difficult time imagining themselves, you know, in these kind of acute struggle situations, right? But they're complementary, and this is what we need to understand. We need to find out how to combine both types of energies in a productive unity.
Okay, let's take a step back to apply one or two of the principles of peer production.
Yes.
To Occupy Wall Street.
Okay.
So let's go across what I consider the three main areas. And you can also talk about the main
okay.
areas for you. So
yeah.
For me, the three main areas are governance.
Yeah.
That includes decision making. The second one's economic production.
Yes.
So producing goods that people need or want. And the third is cultural production.
Okay.
Embedded within that, I see ecological sustainment.
All right.
The contextual ecological sustainment.
Okay, I'll try to answer that question the way you pose it, but then also kind
then
of use my own triarchy. So the triarchy I use is peer production is the ability to create value in common. Peer governance, the ability to manage and govern that process, and including decision making and conflict resolution. And then peer property, which is the ability to to keep the produced value in common, not to have it privatized or taken away. So those three things. So I'll try to combine both, right? So first of all, you could argue, what are they producing? But I think that Occupy Wall Street is the peer production of a political commons. So people are voluntarily aggregating in a space to create a new politics, right? This whole discussion about what are they demanding. Now, in one way, this is a fake discussion because, it's pretty clear they want certain things, like separation of money and state, corporation and state. These things come back all the time. So, but at the same time, there's also kind of an openness to what do we want really, right? And so there is actually, it's a space of dialogue, of production, where multiple publics with different values, shared and different values, try to mash out something that they can unite around. And so that's the production. That's the production process of a new politics that is done in a commons-oriented way. So that's like really what peer production is about. Now, in this case, we produce, immaterial political discourse as, the production value, right? Then you have governance. Okay, yes, governance is, I think, what the general assemblies are about, what the working groups are about, what the operating groups are about, and what the caucuses are about. I don't know if you're familiar with the structure, the way I understand it. You have the General Assembly, which takes really very general, basic decisions. But then you have these semi-autonomous groups. Operating groups do stuff for the General Assembly, for the community. And the working groups discuss stuff, like, more detailed thrashing out of certain positions and viewpoints. And the caucuses are a mechanism to protect minorities, like gender-based or race-based minorities, so they can kind of like have a relative veto right to say, okay, this is not good for us, right? So it's a very peer-based governance mechanism. I myself am a bit of a critic of the pure consensus-based decision-making because it has a lot of advantages, but it has also a lot of limitations in terms of actually doing things. But I think at this point in time, it's exactly what they needed to create unity and find commonality. And then the more dynamic aspect finds its way in the working groups and the operating groups, right? So that's the governance part. Now, the economic part, provisioning part, right? Provisioning part has different elements. One is, so I'm a big fan of a book called Civilizing the Economy by Marvin Brown. He's a scholar in California. And basically, his vision is that, the economy is a provisioning system, right? So it shouldn't be like something that's outside of people's, purview through only private players, but it should actually be something that citizens, should decide. Like, how do we do this? What's the best way to deal with water, with air, with food? And I always had a discussion with Marvin about, yes, it's a beautiful idea, but how do we get there, Well, Occupy Wall Street is doing it. They have provisioning systems for food, for medical care, and it's exactly how it works. They have meetings as citizens, and they say, okay, how are we going to do this? And then they make a decision, and you have like people in Vermont are providing food. You have a street vendor project where part of the money, which is fundraised by a finance commission, goes to actually paying small vendors to provide, food, and at the same time a living wage to the street vendors. There's a veterinarian. There was a library. I mean, really, seriously, these people. And it's prefigurative. This is how we want to do this. We want the people to decide, how to take care of their needs. So another way of seeing it is in terms of institution building. And I see also three parts. I see the commons. So the core of peer production is a commons, where people can freely contribute value. Then we have institutions that manage the infrastructure of cooperation. So, for example, in free software, you have the Apache Foundation, which makes sure that people can keep working on the Apache server, which is the basis of the internet. Well, in Occupy Wall Street, you have these provisioning systems, you have the General Assembly, You know, they don't command and control the people, right? It's not like in a hierarchy in a corporation where they say what they should be doing. These are structures which allow people to continue the occupation. But the occupation is autonomous. So this is a very important social innovation. In peer production, it's also being implied, the way I see it, in Occupy Wall Street. And then the third part is the entrepreneurial coalition, which is basically entrepreneurs and businesses which function not in an exploitative manner, but as a way to support the continuation of the community and to create value on top of the commons without destroying the commons. Now, this is always something very difficult to do with for-profit companies. You know, like, think about Facebook or even IBM with Linux. They're always trying to enclose, right? Because their profit depends on the scarcity-based market dynamics, right? But if you look at Occupy Wall Street, well, all around the park before it was before the eviction, you had all these street vendors, right? And they were operating in synergy, for example, through this street vendor project with the community. So in many ways, this is what I'm trying to say, that Occupy Wall Street already prefigures the kind of society we, you know, that we may want to replace the one that is becoming increasingly dysfunctional. And this is where we come in your sustainability issue, right? The current system, one of the really simple ways to formulate, you know, what's wrong with the DNA or the operating system is the current system believes nature is infinite, that we can use it infinitely and dump waste, ignore all externalities, environmental externalities, and
can you repeat that again, starting with the current system?
Okay.
Because of that.
Yeah.
Because of that.
So the current system. Okay. So the current system is based on a really dysfunctional basic operating system. You know, like a DNA that's not in harmony with the planet. So it thinks that nature is infinite. So we can just take whatever resources we want from the earth and not care about resourcing it back. And we just dump the waste. And we, for-profit companies, if they're not regulated, tend to ignore environmental externalities, right? And then we also have a system that combines that pseudo-abundance, that false sense of abundance, with artificially maintained scarcity. So sharing and cooperation is illegal. We have copyright, we have patents, which make it difficult for people to work together and share knowledge without either asking permission or paying money. And so it got it wrong on both counts. And peer production is different, because what it does is, when production is community-based, sustainability is almost like a given, because as a community, you want to make the best possible solution for your needs. So if you design software, you make the best possible software. You don't privatize it. You know, you're not trying to make sure that other people cannot use it. You don't willfully put things in it which handicap the use of the software. And it's the same with, you know, open hardware. You design stuff that's made to last, that's modular, so that anybody can participate, so that everybody can improve the design, right? So the fact that Occupy Wall Street is peer producing its political commons kind of inherently already has a message of sustainability, right? And I think one of the ways we can see that is the way they use technology. It's not a high tech glorification, you know, it's not like the iPhone and the iPad. You know, a lot of people use them, and they use Tumblr and they use Wi-Fi. At the same time, you see, you know, the mic check, technology. You see the technology with, you know, using posters, handwritten. You see there's a sensitivity in Occupy Wall Street for actually balance with the planet. It's kind of implicit in the way they behave. There's no worship of technology as such. It's instrumentalized to mobilize people, so that people know about the message. But it's also used in a kind of a conscious way, right? Because if you have a technology where one person is the only one to know about it, that's not very democratic. So, you know, the encampments are making sure that they use technology in a more democratic and inclusive way.
And I guess there's some missing pieces here. So I see the people at Occupy Wall Street as a segment of the population, a cross section of the population that share particular values, particular visions or orientations, but certainly not, and maybe they're prefigurative, but if we're talking, I mean, you talk about a general shift. You talk about a, you know, in a sense, a revolution or evolution to a different type of system. And so, for me, the conceptual gap is between these people that, and there are a lot of people, and there are different parts of the country, and I acknowledge that. What is it about, what makes their values prefigurative? How are they, in some way, a bridge to a different system, to a broader system? Because Occupy Wall Street in itself is a self-provisioning, self-governing protest.
Yes.
But that's not what life is like
most
of the time.
Of course.
So what is this? What is this? What does this new system look like? Maybe in its seed forms,
yeah,
and possibly in its broader forms.